right. I'm starting with some opening words, which are listed in your hymnal as closing words, and then I'm going to do the opposite at the end. How's that? These are from Sarah Morris Campbell. We receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. So perhaps there will be some unknown here for you this morning. Welcome.
Yes, welcome. And if you see us juggling things, we thought it would be better for you to see the screen, but the lectern is way over there. So, you know, when we're juggling things and dropping things, it's because we wanted to be closer to you. I just want to talk, before we get into the introductions, just let you know what it is we're going to be doing here today, this morning. We're talking about how do we bring staff into our congregations well and support them well throughout their tenure as well. So we'll be talking about beginnings, how do we onboard them, welcome them, ongoing support, endings, and then at the end, time for your questions and answers. But if you have a question in the middle of something because it doesn't make sense, we're okay with that. We might say we're getting to that, though. And I think that's it for that slide.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a little tiny bit about me. I'm on UUA headquarters staff based in Rochester, New York. I work from home. For one more week, I am professional development specialist in the professional development office. Then I'm moving to the Office of Church Staff Finances, where I will be compensation and staffing practices manager. So basically, I'm moving from helping church staff be great employees to helping congregations be great employers. How about you, Lisa?
I'm Lisa Presley. I'm a lifelong Unitarian Universalist. I am celebrating 25 years in our ordained ministry. And I serve as a congregational life consultant for the Mid-America region. So I'm also UUA staff, but I'm regional staff. And I got into this kind of work because a number of years ago, I had to hire caregivers for my mother. And so I didn't have an HR degree. So I went and stayed at a Holiday Inn Express and learned everything. That's a joke for those of you who've seen the commercials. And I learned a lot about HR, but I've been a very strong advocate for congregations as good employers since I've been in the ministry. And even before, I think.
So let's see who else is here. Do we have ministers in the room today? Awesome. Excellent. And how about other staff members of congregations? And how many of you are administrators, you other staff? And how other non-administrative staff? All right. What kind of staff members? Shout it out. Accounts payable. Great. Fabulous. Great. So administrative onboarding money things. Excellent. And how about what kind of lay leaders? Do we have personnel committee? Yep. Board members? Yep. Some dual small congregations with many hats. Right. Right. Healthy congregation team. Excellent. Anybody we've missed? Any other kinds of partner of the president. Okay, excellent. Very good.
And the gentleman over there.
Yes.
Electrician.
Good. Great. So we got the whole gamut. Well, thank you all for being here this morning. And I think you'll find that things that we say, it's going to be a mix of kind of administrative details and storytelling and big picture mindset. So I hope there's something for everyone.
And sorry about the bleed-through noise. There's something about William Barber being in the next room that, I'm surprised anybody showed up. So thank you. Thank you for, you'll be able, they're probably going to archive that one on the web, So here you get your questions answered for sure. So I just want to talk to you. This is a roadmap of where we're going in the whole beginning section. We'll be talking about what does it mean for a congregation to be an employer, talk about benefits, personnel policies, and how to begin the new person in their job. What do we do and how do we do that? I once had a waiter who said that he was very angry with his parents that he wasn't born at Three Mile Island because he'd then have the third arm, which would be really helpful as a waiter, and I'm feeling that same thing here. So, the congregation is employer. Yes.
I can send it to you as a PDF, and it's going to be, it's being recorded, so it'll be...
And so, yes, but yes, we can do that. We can get that to you. And so at the end, if you want it, come up. We'll pull out a sheet where if you put your name and email address, we will do that. So one of the things that our congregations often forget, that they are actually legally employers, and that that although... the people work for them, they also have to take all the duties and responsibilities of what being an employer means. So one of the things, and these are not in particular order, and on the last slide, which we'll leave up there for quite a while, it shows a number of resources. And on the Mid-America region's website, which is midamericauua.org, we have a checklist that I created. It's not necessarily definitive, but it's really darn helpful about all the things that you need to do as employers when you bring new staff on. So the first thing I've listed here is a background check. You need to do a background check on all employees. I would also say many of your key volunteers. But and you need, of course, to get the legal permission from the person to do this. But as the background check, what it does is you want to make sure that it's tailored for their job. So what you do is you do a criminal background check on everybody. If it's somebody who will be dealing with money, you would add the financial part. If it's somebody who is driving, you would do the driving part. Church Mutual, and their website is churchmutual.com, has created a body called, or they're in collaboration with Trusted Employees, which on the UUA website, it lists two different organizations that can do background checks, Oxford Documents and also the Trusted Employees of Church Mutual. We've recently switched our region over to using the Trusted Employees one because it's much easier to use. You get your results faster. So that's just to do. And they allow you to set up a variety of different templates so that if you're doing staff or volunteers or whomever, you can just click a button and get the what you need. You also need to know the difference between a 1099 and a W-2 staff person. A W-2 person is an actual employee of the organization. Often congregations want to switch their staff to be 1099 or contractors, independent contractors. The benefit for the congregation then is you don't have to pay the FICA tax. However, if you look at the definitions of what a 1099 is versus a W-2, almost everybody who works in your congregation should be receiving a W-2. They are an employee because generally you will define how they have to do their job, when they do their job, and you will provide the tools. It's most common that we try to make musicians W or 1099s, but most of them are really W-2. Not going to go into all that legality now, but it's something to really pay attention to. You have to make sure that you're doing the tax forms. You're deducting all the taxes and that you submit those and you get all that stuff out in a timely manner. You need to do, legally, you need to do an I-9 form, which is one that shows that the person is legally eligible to work in this country. Some congregations might, as a matter of principle or conscience, say, we're not going to do that, but you need to know what the risks are involved. It can be a fine of up to $1,000 a day for every employee for whom you don't have an I-9 on record. You also have to report a new hire as your state requires. Most states require you to report that you've done a new hire. This was put into place primarily so that anyone who owed back child care or child support. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Child support would be able to have their pay garnished to do that. So although it might seem, why do we have to tell the state about this? There is a really good, compelling reason for doing that. And also you keep yourself out of trouble. And then there's the whole question of benefits. Slide, please. So one of the things about the benefits is that most benefit plans have a deadline by which you have to enroll your employees. On some things it's 30 days, some days it's 60 days, but you have to pay attention to this because it might mean that the person becomes ineligible for any of the benefits that you want to offer, or it might mean in the case of disability or health insurance, they may need to have to provide documentation that shows that they have no pre-existing conditions. If you use the UUA's group insurance plans, as long as they are enrolled within a timely fashion, they don't have to provide those kind of background checks or medical checks. And we have two people here who do insurance and this kind of stuff, so I'm sure if I'm saying anything really stupid or wrong, you're going to stop me, right? Thank you. Okay. You know, as I said, I only play an HR person in real life. I'm not one. So, but there's also the question of equity. Who in your congregation gets benefits? On some of the insurance plans available from the UUA and other sources, if you're offering it to one person on your staff, you legally need to offer it to others. One of the things that I find crazy is that we often will protest companies like Walmart because they're not hiring people for enough hours to be able to get them benefits, and yet we will turn around and do the same thing to our employees in the congregation. So it's a matter of equity and being good employers. The pension, again, who gets the pension under the UUA pension plan? All eligible employees must be enrolled in the pension plan at the same percentage rate of contribution. That's a change that's happened only a couple of years ago, that it has to be the same rate, but you will be asked to certify that to the UUA. So there may be a time delay. If there's a new person into the system, it's a 1 year before they are eligible for the pension plan. But if it's someone who has been in the pension plan in a previous position, they can immediately be entered into that pension plan. And next slide. And so the UUA has all of these plans, and you can go on to the on the menu. There's the benefits and under careers and callings. There's the benefits tab, and you click on that, and you can find this. But you know, some of the ethical questions to ask is: so, what do we as a congregation pay for? What are we going to cover? So can you offer these plans without paying anything, you know, making your employee pay. But the question is whether or not that's the ethical or moral thing to do as a congregation. I believe it's not, because we are a covenantal faith tradition who believes in justice, and so we need to treat our employees justly as well. So the health insurance, what percentage are you going to pay? Is there going to be a cap on it? Are you talking just about the individual or their family? We in our region took a big financial hit because we hired the right person for the job who is a single parent with two kids. Think about what we're paying for their health insurance, and we knew it was the right thing to do. And so we have done that. Dental, again, is it the person or the family? Same thing with the life and accidental death and disability. You know, that's another possibility. I strongly say that you really need to have your employees enrolled in the life and accidental death and disability plan. I know one congregation where the minister was not, had a stroke, and then the congregation was left trying to figure out, what do we do? How do we support this family? And so it's really important to check with your employees. On the long-term disability, there's a question of whether or not it's pre or post-tax. If the person pays the premiums themselves from after-tax dollars, any benefits they receive down the road are tax-exempt. If it's paid for by the congregation in pre-taxed income, then it means that if the person ever has to collect the benefits, they are taxable benefits to them at that point. So for most of us, it will be reasonable to make sure they're paid out of post-tax income. Okay. Personnel policies. Every congregation needs personnel policies, regardless of how small you are, because it's important to make sure that your employees know what to expect. So as a minimum, it should include your policies on benefits, time off. It should have some little bit, you know, could have paragraphs saying, we have an organization, the board's the top, you know, or here's who you're responsible to. Needs to also to have the supervisor structure, who is their supervisor, goals and evaluations, how that will be done, how there are processes for concerns and complaint, and grounds for dismissal. It's also good to add in things about sexual harassment, and their protection for that. And we have samples of all these things. Your regional staff team or Jan and the Office of Church Staff Finance, we all have access to copies and examples of all these documents. So what happens if you hire a member of your congregation? First thing is they lose their congregation. This is all about boundaries and making sure there are good boundaries. If you hire an employee, they lose their congregation. They need to lose their congregation because they have to put their employee responsibilities on top of any other fidelity or loyalty. The second is, what are the power dynamics there? You need to enter into covenant with the person about how that's going to work. And there can be a lot of really tricky issues if the person is not capable in their job. How do you get rid of them when they're a member? Ordinarily, I say to congregations, thou shalt not hire members as employees, because it just causes too many problems. People who assume loyalties that they should get special favorites, they're in and out groups depending on who they hang with, all of that kind of stuff makes it really, really tricky. You do not necessarily have to have a UU who does religious education. You just need somebody who does it in a UU sensibility. So if you're saying, but there's no one else in our community, there often is. Next.
All right.
Hey, this is you.
This is me. You got to, you can breathe. So, okay, you're starting a new job, or maybe you're joining a new organization and you're going for the first time. Something new where you feel a little, maybe not completely sure what's going to happen next. So I'm going to give you like 45 seconds to just think when that happened to you, how it felt. And, you know, what might make you feel comfortable? What did make you feel comfortable? What would have made you feel comfortable? What helps you do your best in those situations? Applauding us. I'm going to give everyone just a few seconds to sit. All right, so go ahead and just turn to someone near you and just literally take, you know, 1 minute each to what were some highlights that came to you while you were thinking. So go ahead, first person. All right, and the other person in your pair can say a few words. So, okay, just a couple of really quick shout-outs, you know, like 6 words or less. Anything come up for you that might have come to bear on what happens with a new staff member? Knowing what is expected. Need to be able to appreciate and listen to how that new person learns. Yes.
I think in addition to knowing what's expected, knowing whose expectations count, especially in a church environment.
Yes, sometimes there's a feeling like you're accountable to multiple entities.
Being available for the person at any given time, if they have any questions, anything.
Yep, just being available to them to answer questions.
Two things. One is, what does excellence look like? So I want to know what, how they define that.
Yep.
And the second is not just knowing the goals that happen in the schedule throughout the year, but what are the steps that lead up to those goals?
Yeah. So goals and steps to lead up to them and what excellence looks like.
So I would like to have a nice computer rather than one that some member of the congregation gave to the church. Yeah. I'd like a phone that works, office equipment and supplies.
Yep. Okay. That's probably a really good segue. We asked actual church staff about what happened that was helpful and not so helpful. So I'm going to do some storytelling off of my phone here. Give me just a second. And I'm going to start at the bottom so that we move into the happy, awesome stories. And I'm not doing this to blame or shame. Like if you say, uh-oh, that might have been my congregation, you know, that's okay. We're all learning, and that's why you're here, and we know that it just doesn't always go perfectly. But appreciate, you can appreciate how that person might have felt on that first day or that first week if they were in this church. So what happened that made your start more difficult? The Ari was in a separate building. I was handed the keys, pointed to the building. Nobody walked me over there. I had to figure out the key to the building, the key to the office. Nobody checked on me or helped me find anything. I walked into an office that had not been cleaned out, and the chair was broken, and the previous person's computer was dead, so there were no files. The RE committee told me I wasn't their choice. Aww. Aw, I found out that the funding had been slashed, but I was expected to maintain the same program. Aw, yeah. I like this one. The mythology of an aesthetics committee who said we couldn't put anything on the walls, etc. It turned out that that committee did not actually exist. So, but you can imagine how disconcerting that would be. My predecessor was still in a position of influence in the congregation, but now without direct accountability to anyone. That's a tricky situation to navigate. Okay, two people told me that renters routinely used their space that was their office. So you can imagine maybe the previous music director never used the office, and then the new person comes in and expects to be there using the computer and the files and doesn't have a space to work. And there was another one that two people told me they set off the church alarm system on their first day because something hadn't gotten coded or they weren't told what to do. What would have been helpful but didn't happen, I would have loved to know a couple people I should get to know that have information or influence in the congregation who know what's going on. I wish someone had told me the treasured traditions so I wouldn't accidentally mess with them. You can appreciate that, right? I wish somebody had culled all the ancient supplies and the stuff that got mildewed after the water heater exploded. So All right, and now for some really cool things, practical things that made your life and job easier, support for a flexible schedule, a coworker who answered my questions, including what was appropriate to wear on Sunday morning. You know, our congregations are all over the place on these things. It's nice to just know you have a buddy to help you out. A predecessor left a first things folder for me, well-organized files. What helped you feel welcomed and valued? These are like the real A-plus cool things, but they're simple. And listen to how many of these are virtually free, right? This is not about having to give the person a 10% raise. This is about simple things that you can do that say, we value you, we're glad you're here. They sent me flowers when I accepted the job. There was a card on my desk with a plant from the board on my first day. There was an announcement not only in the church newsletter, but in the local newspaper. They had an installation for me and invited the mayor. How cool is that? That says we're really excited that you're here. The minister and their spouse invited me to dinner. Someone gave me a GPS because I was new to the area. There was a ritual during worship, and they handed me an oversized key, so symbolism and ritual. So I'll just say that, again, a lot of these don't, you know, they're not big money things. They're just about being intentional, about letting someone know that you care. And I would say it's just as important when you say, hire the RE active person into the staff position or the person from a nearby congregation as it is if you did a national search and brought someone in from across the country. Because even especially if they're from the congregation, again, they're in a new role, new identity, new accountability, new kinds of boundaries, and showing that kind of intention is a way of honoring all that and clarifying it. All right.
We realize we're giving you a drink of water from a fire hose this morning. This is stuff. And so, again, I say make sure that you know that you can contact the Office of Church Staff Finance and your regional staff to help for help on these issues. Jan and I will make sure you have our email addresses at the end so you can email either one of us if you have questions. So what are those first few days and weeks like? What is that like? So one of the questions is, how does the person get trained for the job? If they are overlapping with their person, only allow that person to be the one training them if you trust them and value them. If you're getting rid of somebody for cause, you don't want that person anywhere near your new employee. So you might want to make sure that they get paid vacation in addition to whatever paid vacation they might have. Because you don't want to have the culture that you're trying to get rid of be the one to teach the culture to the new person. But if they are, you know, see if you're recreating the position or if the person's already gone, then who is the person who can help them figure that out? And that's one of the things that you're going to have to figure out within your own structure. Who is really the person who understands the job, understands what you want to do? So it may be that there could be, and if they relate to a committee, you want to make sure that the chair of that committee is a good, responsible person who can talk to them. We'll talk about supervision by committee in a minute. But you want to make sure that you help them learn that job. What is the code to the alarm system? How do they get into things? And so figure out all the details and be very open. If you don't know the details, especially if there's been a gap or you had to let go of the person because one of the things you say is, we're not sure of all of this. And so we need you to ask all the questions you can and we will find answers or we will create new and better ways. And we're looking forward to you helping us figure out how to do this better. Because it might be that the last person didn't do it the best way, and there are new ways or different ways. But please check in with whomever the responsible person is, because there might be a way, might be a reason why we're doing it a particular way. So not everybody is always attuned to your culture when they first come in. Policies and procedures, you tell them, if you have a personnel manual, again, they get that. But also, what's the way we do things around here? I've been an interim minister, and in every congregation I've gone into, they've had an entirely different way of doing the exact same job. So how does it look in your structure and in your setting? What are the things? How do you do things? What's expected, as Jen was saying about the dress, about this, are they expected to be there? How do they treat committee chairs who might come to them and ask things? What's the lines of authority and accountability? All of that kind of stuff. How do you do things? And if you don't already have a current standard operating procedures document, start creating one now so it will be there when you need it. The safety policies and procedures is a really big thing that often gets overlooked. How many of you know where, and this is particularly true, I used to do this with boards. Anytime there's a new board and we did an orientation, included a tour of the building. Where are the fire extinguishers? Where are the first aid kits? Where are the AEDs if you have one? Who is trained in using an AED and how do you do that? Who maintains the fire extinguishers? What are the routes to get out? What are your policies and procedures for evacuating the building or sheltering in? How does all that work? And you need to let the new person know about all these things. What happens, after hours if something happens to the building? Are there particular doors that stick and you really have to be careful with? One church I worked in had 14 doors into the building. It was a church of 150 people, but the way the building was built, almost every room had a door to the outside. So everybody in the neighborhood knew if you needed to go to the bathroom and you couldn't get to your house soon enough, you'd just walk around the church and one of the doors would open and you could go into the bathroom. It's not the best security. So, things like that. But you need to let your staff know that kind of thing. So the ongoing support. Big question, who supervises? Who supervises them? It is as an employer. I think it is extremely bad practice to have a committee supervise any employee.
Oh, look at all these people that are excited
Because
hear this.
What that does, these are the people that pay their salary, who donate their money. They change, or at least should be changing, who is in charge of the committee and all of that. It is not good to have an employee. They don't really have anybody to go to. Then if there are any issues or they have a conflict with the people they're working with, how do they sort that out? You must have a designated person who is their supervisor. Because this is about non-ministerial staff, for the most part, this workshop, often that can be the minister. If you have one. If you're a lay-led congregation without a minister, then it might be the chair of the personnel committee who wants to be the chair, cattle call, but somebody you have appointed, somebody you have trained, somebody who understands what that means and has learned about what supervision is. So yes, you need the training for the supervisor. Susan Beaumont, who is a consultant, used to be with the Alban Institute when the Alban Institute was there, does this amazing class on the art and ministry of supervision. It's probably in my 25 years one of the top two trainings I've taken about how to do anything in congregational life. She is fabulous. She's also written a book that's in our thing. It's called When Moses Meets Aaron. So those of you who understand biblical stories will get that context. And there needs to be the one-on-one supervision, not group-on-one supervision. There needs to be a real good balance that you develop between understanding what it means to be covenantal with your employees and also an employer. So the covenantal part is, what are the values we stand for? This again gets back to the whole thing of the equity around benefits and pay. Where are we on fair compensation for this person? Are we providing them that? So we're in covenant with our employees as well as being legal employers. And that's a balance that can be difficult to sort out. But you cannot abandon the employer responsibilities because you're in covenant. And as a religious community, you shouldn't abandon the covenant either. So it's this mix of how do you do that? And it's that, as I put up there, mercy and accountability. So how do we hold our people accountable and also allow room for mistakes, errors, learning, you know, fail at our regional assembly, fail was redefined as first attempt in learning. And one of the things that we often do is we often will punish people for making mistakes. In some of the adaptive learning material I've read, one of the people who really champions adaptive leadership, and the name has just gone out of my brain, encouraged a company to give an award monthly for the person who learned the most by making a mistake. What would it be like if that was the culture you had? And if your culture was a yes-first culture.
I heard about a staff team, actually, that was part of their ritual in their weekly or their monthly staff meeting, is everybody would go around the table and say something that they screwed up or would do differently because it didn't work out in the past week.
Imagine cool. What your work lives would be like if you were allowed that ability. You also have to set goals for the position, goals that are in line with the mission of the congregation, what they're required to do. And they need to be, you know, smart, the specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. When I was district executive in the Heartland District, that one of the initial goals they had for me was that I would make sure that every congregation was represented at our district assembly. And I said, great, when are you giving me subpoena powers? There was no way that I could make a congregation come to any meeting. So, you know, what is, and they went, oh yeah, that's probably a good question. So they were very responsive, but they hadn't thought about it that way. So what are the measurables? What are you really expecting the person to do? And how are you supporting them in doing it? Because if you're not supporting them to do it, there was another congregation that was going to give a bonus to the minister if they brought in X number more members. And so I said, well, great. So anytime you don't want to give the minister the money, you're just mean to the people when they show up. You know, so is it attainable? How are you supporting them? All that kind of stuff. There should be, you know, three really kinds of process of supervision. The daily stuff, you know, where you praise, where you correct early on. The quarterly, where you look back, what's happened, a third of the time in that conversation should be about looking back, what has happened, you know, that kind of stuff. But two-thirds of the time looking forward, what can we do? Again, Susan Beaumont's book has tons on this. And then the annual performance evaluation, it's really about the dialogue, not the form. But there should be nothing that comes as a surprise at the annual evaluation, because it should have been discussed first when it was an issue as a daily thing, then again perhaps during the quarterly. And so if it's mentioned on the final, then nothing should be a surprise to the employee at that point.
All right.
How did I do with my time? How are we on time?
We're just perfect, Lisa.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
See, this is
you're
the kind
amazing.
Of feedback you ask and
we,
you know you get.
We practiced this dozens of times, as you can only imagine. Okay, so professional development. So now we're getting, you know, we had trouble knowing where to stop with the content because you're always setting up for what happens next, right? What the reason you're doing good things the first day and the first week is for the ongoing success. So we really wanted to take you through the arc. So professional development, why develop your staff? And to me, this is a real theological piece. I mean, this is who we are as Unitarian Universalists. We are always works in progress, always learning, always recognizing that we can grow and go deeper and move differently in the world. So that is why, that is like a real deep reason for professional development for your staff. It's who we are. Obviously, the idea is that your staff will bring you stronger, more vital programming, higher level professional of professionalism. And you've probably noticed, church is changing, the world is changing, the religious landscape overall, not just for Unitarian Universalists. There is so much in flux. A lot of our benchmarks and our tried and true practices are just no longer working the way they did 50 years ago or even 10 years ago or 3 years ago. So you need to rely on your staff to stay abreast and to practice and to have opportunities to connect with peers and colleagues who can help them learn best practices and good ways of doing things and help them experiment with how they do their work. And certainly, professional development, maybe it's just me because I would just have a job where all I did was go around and learn things all the time. I think that would be perfect for me. But it is, I'll bet some of you are like that too. It's a way of saying thank you and taking good care of your staff to give them opportunities to learn and grow. So it's, please pay attention to that and we can, okay, where's the, Lisa, are you walking away with the clicker? So from the staff side, I'll say a couple of different things also. Certainly many of our staff, hopefully you're hiring staff who are excited about doing their jobs as well as they can, being as competent and as confident and comfortable as they can. They're looking for opportunities for growth. Also for validation, things like our credentialing programs or some kind of certificate program that they might find related to their job, or even taking a course where you get something at the end that you can put on your resume or you can get credit for. There's something, we can all read books and go to stuff, but there is something really affirming about saying I completed this thing, whether it's a college degree or something that you can, say was a formal course of study. And certainly I know that many of my professional friends just really, really value the chance to be with other people who get their job. I was with the administrators a couple of times over the last couple days and witnessing the power of you being able to share with one another things with people who share a setting with you and share responsibilities with you. Compensation, yes, it's very appropriate for staff to be rewarded for being intentional in their professional growth and achieving greater levels of competence in their jobs.
Can I just say
yes,
something about the compensation? One of the things that we discover is congregations, if they don't pay attention to compensation while they have ongoing staff, get hit with amazing sticker shock when they have to replace that person, when they realize how badly they have paid them. So this is not only about rewarding the people, it's about protecting your congregation down the road.
Thank you for that. And resume builder, I want to say this because I know it's tricky. I've had people say to me, I don't think my congregation wants me to do RE credentialing because they're afraid that I'm going to get more valuable and leave. Well, you know what, folks? If you have a professional who's eager to learn and grow and get better and you're not nurturing that in them, they are going to leave. So please, pay attention and let them build their resume. And if it means that down the road they're ready for their next career move, then, we're all in this together, folks. And, pat yourselves on the back for having brought your staff member to that point in their career. All right. No lack of, yes.
It is also of benefit to the congregation if the staff members are known, at least in local UU land circles, that it is a thriving congregation. So that is one reason that congregations should be supporting all sorts of professional development and have interactions with other churches.
Very nice. Thanks for that, Kiki.
Yes.
Also kindly remember that people talk to one another. So therefore the reputation of the congregation as being a good place to work or a bad place to work is always important too.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, one more.
This is more of a specific question. We have a large church that has attached preschool, a couple hundred people, very active. We have one cleaning person who's assigned to clean that preschool. She gets about $12.30 an hour. Is that appropriate?
That's a really specific one.
Right. That depends on what are the going wages in your community. Are you offering benefits, et cetera? I would suggest that you stop at the compensation consultants table in the exhibit hall, and they can help you figure out based on where you live, et cetera, how you would determine if that's fair.
Great. So there's no lack of options, right? I mean, people can read books. There's online. There's free stuff online. There are courses. There are many college courses now online for free. Certainly professional organizations are wonderful for getting development for your staff. I want to just say a quick word about team development, and this could be as simple if you're thinking, oh wow, send our whole staff team to this thing 2 hours away and travel and registrations and all that. You know, this could be as simple as maybe somebody on the staff read a really cool book or an article that they think, wow, maybe we could do this together. We could talk about this. Hey, could everyone read this? And then over the next couple of staff meetings, we're going to ask some questions around it. So team development is important, learning together. And it doesn't have to be this like gigantic project, right, to get everybody someplace. All right, I'm going to say a couple quick words about time and money because people are like, wait a minute, you know, but we barely have time to do our jobs and we don't have enough money. So, yeah, you know, yes, that's a thing. I would encourage, as we've said before, equity across your staff. That doesn't mean everybody gets the exact same amount of time for professional development, however you would measure that, but that you have a philosophy around professional development that you apply to all of your staff. Build it in somehow. And so, you know that little Zen saying, like, on those really busy days when you don't have time to meditate for an hour, you should meditate for 2 hours? Have you heard that? That's how I feel about staff development. When it's just so nuts that you're barely getting any, you know, time to breathe, that is really when it's most important. It becomes part of your self-care. It's a way of getting up out of the weeds and doing some reflection and some learning so that you can feel more come back renewed. And it's a good time for staff team development as well. Money. Same thing, equity, you know, doesn't mean everybody gets the exact same amount, but it means that there's some thought given to what you want for your religious professionals in terms of budgeting for their growth and development, and that you apply that across your staff, and it's going to vary. And there is a tax. We get this a lot, so I'll just say one thing about it. If you can use professional development funds for pricey things. Like, usually it's like registration and it happened and it's gone. There's not a tangible thing. If you do use it for something that's going to have significant residual value, like a computer, okay, you can do that, but recognize that there is a tax implication. It has to be the residual value. If that person leaves and they want to take it with them, that has to be treated as a taxable benefit, all right? Staff relations and teams, why? You know, I mean, I don't even know what kind of other organization we'd even ask this question, like, why should everybody kind of be on the same page and work together? But, you know, for some reason, our churches have historically often just everyone shows up and does their thing. And sometimes they do it exceptionally well. But I would submit to you that Wow. You can do that for us in a few minutes. But having a cohesive staff is just going to help your congregation fly. So I came up with this A, B, C, D, and E alignment, shared mission, values. What are we all trying to do together? Big changes, whether it's a staff transition or you're changing buildings. C is for cross ministry endeavors. This could be Black Lives Matter. This could be theme-based ministries, something where you want it to permeate your congregation and not just live in one piece of the congregation. Different forms of church, multi-site, emerging ministries. You can't just leave that up to the minister or up to the one person to figure out. This has to be a team thing. And then certainly living in these times of economic sustainability challenges, you need to be in this together. Your staff need each other as allies. All right. And behaviors of strong teams. I'm going to give you a second. Can people read these seven things? So I'm going to just give you 30 seconds to look at them.
But the people who are watching, will this be linked with the slides so that they can read them? Okay, perfect.
Okay. So, trust, your staff trust each other and can be vulnerable. Give me a big yay if you would say that about your staff. Yay. All right. How about engage conflict productively? Pursue clarity of purpose and alignment of goals? Hold themselves and each other accountable? Put collective outcomes ahead of individual interests. Comprise a learning community. Learn together. A little bit of a yay. Make time for balcony work, kind of getting up out of the weeds and looking at things. Self-assessment. Okay, so I mean, these are things to think about that I compiled from many sources, and trust being paramount. If your staff don't have each other's backs, can't take risks together, can't be vulnerable, you're going to have a lot of trouble doing anything else. Balcony work is a term from adaptive leadership parlance that means sort of getting out of the mode of what has to happen on Sunday and next week and sort of what's the big picture, you know, like the 30,000 foot view, if you've heard that term, kind of taking a step back and looking at bigger issues that shape your next 6 months and 5 years.
And one of the, that just raised a thought that we didn't even talk about in these, when we were preparing this, is that that often happens when, for ministers, when they are on sabbatical, they get that time to step outside to be able to look greater. So what about sabbatical for your other employees? Have you thought about that? The UUA offers sabbatical for any employee as a time to step away from their job and be able to come back and see that good. But I don't know of many of our congregations that provide some kind of sabbatical plan for their longer-term employees. All right, so endings. One of the things we know well, is if you can figure out how to end something well, it helps the next new beginning. We learn that with ending of ministries, and that often congregations will have celebrations and rituals and all that kind of stuff. But we don't always do it for the rest of the staff. And so, why do people leave? We know why people leave. They move on, you know, because you've invested so much in them, and, you know, they now, you know, as Jen was saying, the fear about, well, they're going to go leave us and get another job. Well, you know, people do move on. Sometimes it's just because they're bored and they've met all the challenges, or it might be that they realize that you need somebody with a different skill set to do the job. Or they could be moving, you know, all that kind of stuff. So when somebody's moving, just simply moving on, always good to do an exit interview with them to find out what was good or not so good about the job and celebrate the work they've done in some ritualized or public way. You know, if it's someone that not many people know, then figure out, you know, what works for them. So if it is someone who is on your maintenance staff, for example, that might be different than if it's someone who's been the director of your faith development program. But figure out, celebrate in some way. Again, retirement, the same thing. Exit interview. What, you know, what was important? We can help you come up with the questions. They're out there. And then again, celebrate. If it's illness, disability, or death, this can be a much harder thing. Because how does a congregation make that really tough decision about when to help someone make the decision that it's time for them to leave? Some illnesses, some disabilities, it's automatic. Well, and with death, it's usually pretty automatic that they're going to stop working. You know, I'm just saying. But for others, there might come a point. And so the question is, how do you, as an institution, both hold the employee and hold the congregation's needs? And that's where the covenantal comes in. And so how do you support them? This is one of the reasons why you have the insurance, to be able to help them do that. And we all know that disability insurance doesn't help as much as it should. But you know, and it's a touchy dance. And this is when you call your regional staff to come in and help you work with this, to coach you through this kind of thing. So you, again, you support and celebrate, and you also have to do the grief work with the congregation, with yourselves, you know, with the rest of the staff team. What does it mean that this person is no longer with us? And there might be some grief work, well, you know, in the others as people leave. Like when Nancy Hagee retired from our Mid-America staff, she had been in her position for 22 years. She was the longest serving field staff person. And so we had to help congregations figure out how to grieve the loss of that. And we as a staff team had to figure out how to grieve the loss of her. For cause, it's complex, especially if they're a member. And I'm going to be talking more about that because it's more of a special case after Jan talks some more.
Yeah, and I know we're a few minutes behind where we wanted to be. So I'm going to just say quickly, closure, celebration, covenant, crossover sometimes, as we discussed with the predecessor, and cloud. When someone's leaving under a cloud, right, you know, they might not necessarily have been terminated, but there's some tricky thing that happens, you know, and then people aren't sure what to do. And I'm here to tell you, I have witnessed congregations who had people leave under very difficult circumstances, even a minister in a parting that was very less than perfect. And you know what? Celebrate that, still do your closure and your celebration and your covenant. Those are really important things. You scale them appropriately. And the people, if they're people who are mad at them or whatever, well, maybe they just won't show up. But there are always going to be people who really need that. So this is not just for the person, but for the health of the whole system. It's for the congregation. So yeah, go ahead and say a few words about terminations.
So terminations are one of the hardest things, and they can be one of the biggest fights in a congregation, depending on how embedded the person is in the life of the congregation. The first thing to do is to have all your policies clear today and hope you never need to use them tomorrow. So who has the, you know, why is William Barber so darn good that he's getting everybody jazzed up? I don't know if you can hear me. I can't hear me, so But who has the ability to hire and fire? You know, in some larger congregations where there's a minister, the minister might be the supervisor but doesn't have that ability to hire or fire. So you need to be clear, who has that right and ability, and how's the dance that's done between the board, the minister, the whomever? What is the supervisor's role in termination? What is the role of the board? And how is this reflected in the personnel policies? The board is ultimately the legal entity of the congregation responsible for that. So even if the minister has the authority, it's a really stupid minister who doesn't go to the board and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking of doing. You know, you need to have that communication and collaboration, but you need to be clear about who has the authority to do both the hiring and the firing. So when it's for cause, I cannot tell you that you need to document. You have to be able to say, on this day they were asked to do X or this happened. You just have to get it all documented. It's a good practice to document everything anyway. So all the staff supervisions should have a document that said, here's what we talked about, here's what happened, all of that kind of stuff, because you never know when you might need it. Especially if there's something that develops as a problem on day one. If it's still a problem on day 10, that's not a problem. But if it's a problem on day 100, you need to be able to show how you've done this. And how has the issue been addressed, not addressed, et cetera? What have they been asked to do? The thing is that anybody can be sued for anything at any time. So what protects our congregations from the suit is to have the documentation that's available. Confidentiality, and so, you know, what support has been offered, what has the employee done, that kind of thing. If it's in all letters of agreement, there should be something about what's grounds for immediate dismissal. And that should include things like physical sexual abuse of child, youth, vulnerable adult, you know, those kinds of things. Theft from the organization, I'm thinking, is another one. Being in a region, in a district that had two embezzlements over time, you know, that's a really big one. So, you know, that kind of thing. But the confidential, and here's where congregations get in trouble, because we are used to being open democratic processes, and our congregants think that they are entitled to any bit of information they want. This is not true when it comes to the role of the congregation as employer. So you need to be as transparent as you can, knowing that much of this information has to be confidential. So you can be transparent about the process. There were some issues. This is the process that we followed to do this. This has been an issue over time. You know, we will not tell you the details because we owe the confidentiality to the person who's leaving. And then also be as generous as you can in termination. People who work for congregations are not entitled to workers' comp or to unemployment insurance. So that's why you should have in your personnel policy what is it that we give to somebody when they leave, because they cannot claim unemployment. So be as generous as you can, because you want to feel good about yourselves. And you know that the next person who comes in may well have heard or will learn at some point how generous you were in that termination. Returning to the congregation, if it's an employee who's a member and you're letting them go, or even if you're not, if they're leaving, you know, if they're coming back in under any situation, you have to have a covenant that has boundaries about the future. What will they do? What won't they do? How involved will they be? Won't they be? You have to help the congregation know that they can no longer go to Susie or Fred to talk about the RE program they used to lead. With the successor, they should have a covenant in place. And you have to bring, and we recommend a ritual to bring them back home into the congregation as a member, thanking them for what happens, what they've done, but also returning them to that state of being a member.
All right. So just these are a few resources that we recommend or touched on. The checklist that Lisa recommended early on, it's really fabulous. Yeah, go ahead, take a picture with your phone. From Starting to Parting is a document on the UUA website that specifically was written for RE and music staff that I compiled from earlier documents, but it really applies to many, about good hiring protocol, interviewing, search, all that stuff, and ongoing support and departures. When Moses Meets Aaron, do not be put off by the subtitle, which is Staffing and Supervision in Large Congregations. It really is applicable to just about anyone. Becoming Staff is a great, you can find this easily online by Dan Hotchkiss. Great, both for the hiring people and the person being hired, about if it's someone within the congregation. All right, so it has to do with what does it mean to become staff for a member. Your regional staff as a resource, such as Lisa. Anybody here from Mid-America? Yeah, all right, so you know Lisa. And then here's my email. So I am a partner to our regional staff in helping with these kinds of issues.
And if you haven't figured out, the clue to UUA email addresses is first initial, last name. Mm-hmm. So I'm Presley at UUA.org. It's like Elvis's daughter's spelling, not anyone else's. But I'm older than she is, so she was named for me.
So here's what the next slide looks like, but I'll put it back to this one in case you're still scribbling or taking a photo. So we have time for a few questions. I'm going to ask, if you think it's something that's so specific that it only applies to you, why don't you come see us at the Church Staff Finances booth? Or regional staff?
Hi, Margaret Mann from Honolulu. You've given us an awful lot of information in a very short period of time. Can we get copies of the slides, or is this?
That's a perfectly good question. On the table over there, because we want to make sure that we clear this space well for what comes next, there's a piece of paper and a pen where you can put your name and your email address, and we will get the slides to you.
Is there a ratio of members to how many total staff kind of positions you can afford? A little
generic guideline.
What are the
benchmarks for that?
Yeah.
There were some awesome benchmarks developed, you know, 20 years ago in a book called Staff Your Church for Growth by Gary McIntosh. Everything that I'm reading lately says that all of our old formulas and stuff are kind of going out the window. So, you know, it used to be kind of X program staff for X members kind of thing. We can chat sometime.
And on the affordability, the question really is, what else are you paying for? If you have no mortgage, you can probably hire more staff than if you have a mortgage that's, you know, so that kind of stuff. So it's really variable.
Hi, I'm Daniel Gregoire from Philadelphia. I was wondering, are there templates that could be used for these supervision meetings, for these staff meetings that might have like some good bullet points for each one?
When Moses Meets Aaron, the book that's up there, has quite a few of those things in it. And your regional staff are probably good resources for that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Robbie Evans from San Diego. Recently, we've had troubles with member complaints of a certain staff member, which resulted in a resignation. Is there, because we have a covenant of good relations, is that something that we can apply to handle members that have complaints to staff? Has anybody done that, procedures, that kind of thing? It could be a whole other workshop, I guess. Anyway, that's my question.
I'm going to let Lisa, I see her nodding.
No. Committees on right relationship are not a place for employees. So any concerns about an employee should be addressed to their supervisor. It's the supervisor's job to protect that employee and or ask for the changes that might be necessary. So again, there's a case of documentation, documentation, documentation. Often what happens is people don't really understand what the job is of that person and that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's up to the supervisor to handle that, but it should not be handled through through right relationship, even if they're a member, because the employee relationship has to take precedence over the covenantal one.
And that's why that accountability, who is their one person who is their supervisor, that's when that really comes in handy for that clarity.
When we have some staff that's been dismissed, and then we have a call from another congregation about evaluating that staff, and are there guidelines for what one should say or how to say things if you really have had problems with the staff and don't want to pass that along?
So I'm going to come to the front so I can be on the camera for this one. This is a really tricky one. Many companies will only confirm the date and the dates of beginning and ending. and the salary range that, or the salary that they left with. That's what, because the ground, this is a very tricky area. And so when I get, you know, I get a lot of calls of these from congregations who are seeking ministers, and they want to know what did they do in the last one. So what I will say often is, there were some issues around this kind of area when they were here. I do not know what they have done to address those areas or whether that was particular to our setting and our culture. But here might be some questions that I would recommend you ask. That way you're not, especially if it's another UU congregation, we don't want to give them the person who we think is totally unsuitable. But we also want to be fair because we do, sometimes it was the culture that didn't fit. Sometimes we screwed up as congregations. And so saying, here's the issues that we had, here's what we learned about what we could have done better, and check with them about their experience here and what they learned and what, you know, how they see it.
And it is complicated by confidentiality. And if I don't list Lisa as a reference, if I list Lisa as a reference, I'm giving Lisa permission to speak, you know. But presumably if Lisa and I had some problems, you know, maybe I would decide not to list Lisa as a reference. And Lisa could get in some hot water if she were to say negative things about me.
Huh, I didn't know that. That's good to know. Yes. We assume that in the ministerial search that regional staff are always automatic the references. So what you can also do is ask them, you know, if you think you're not getting a story, one of the things I recommend to search committees is they ask for the name and contact information of a responsible critic. There's always somebody in the congregation who we might not, you know, might not agree with us, but they can be open and honest and reasonable about who we were. There are also, of course, those in the congregation that would do all in their power to make sure we never breathed again or had a job. So you don't want those people. But a responsible critic is a good person to ask them for if you think there's something you're not getting. Okay.
And FYI, there are file summaries on ministers through the UUA. There is no such thing for other staff.
I think this might need to be our last question, isn't this, with our timing? So you can talk to us afterwards. And I'm sorry, I saw Oh, maybe two.
I just wonder if there's a best practice for the amount of time that a core staff member especially should actually stay away from the congregation if they've been a member after they stop.
The various professional organizations have some things in their professional organization codes around that. It's weaker. I think those areas are being strengthened by the various professional organizations because I'm part of one of those conversations. It really varies a lot depending on the situation. Some prior staff members understand good boundaries and how to be respectful and maybe can come back fairly quickly and be, you know, but to stay away from the area they were serving is important for, you know, it's recommended usually 2 years.
I am a relatively new admin. I've only been in my position for a couple of months, and I don't have any of this. There's nothing. I have to start from scratch and actually create all of this. Where would you recommend I start?
Yeah. From starting to parting is a good UUA resource, and you should be able to just Google it and find it.
Also, the Association of Unitarian Universalist Administrators have a lot of sample documents, so I would say contact them to learn about that, or contact either the Office of Church Staff Finance or your regional team.
Yeah.
And I think
we're going to do some closing words, and then we can hang out for a few minutes, and please do sign up if you want the slides and know that this will be part of the GA programming that is put online, yes? In August. So we can get it to you sooner, the PDF. These words are by that prolific writer, Anonymous. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love
and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Thank you for being here. Now, let it rip, and let's let those people next door hear it.
So they'll be jealous they weren't with you. And thank you for all that you do in your congregations to make sure that your staff are well-treated, well-respected, and you're living our values. And again, over on that table over there is a sign up for the PowerPoints. Thank you.